Luscious Lou, and I listen to the Comic Syndicate. If you love comics, you'll be into it. Listen to the Comic Syndicate. If movies make you contemplate, science will commentate. Twitter for communication at Comic Syndicate 1. I was drowning in a sea of podcasts, and I found the one I need at long last. Book reviews, the news, and sex facts. It's more than anyone could ask for. The Comic Syndicate Podcast. Ooh, the Comic Syndicate Podcast. Ooh, the Comic Syndicate Podcast. Yeah, yeah. The Comic Syndicate Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of Comic Syndicate. Check them out at thecomicsyndicate.podbean.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And now, here are your hosts, Josias.
Welcome to the Comic Syndicate, episode 293. I'm Josias at For the Villain on Twitter, at comic_syndicate on Instagram. All right, guys, I think I have an interesting one written out, and I really don't want to go long on this one. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm probably going to go long on this one, so at least 45 minutes, probably 50 minutes. I'm going to guess about 55 minutes. Hopefully it doesn't go crunch in more than that, but let's rock and roll real quick. Guys, what we spoke about 100 episodes ago, episode 193, we entitled hashtag screensaver, at Member of the Bean Internet for the Villain Play Quick Catch-Up, debate what we spoke about 100 episodes ago. Hashtag sex or bacon. Okay, I remember this. It was an article I brought up where it was a consensus of sorts between people. I forget the demographic. I think between the age of 20 and 40 or 50, something around that. And they were asked if you guys could give up one thing. Would you give up sex or would you give up bacon? Which also had me go down a different rabbit hole at the time and pull up more articles regarding stuff like that. Like, would you give up cheese for the rest of your life? Or would you give up sex? You know, some weird shit like that. There was also another one that was kind of cool that, would you give up the internet? Or would you give up sex? So stuff like that was like, okay, debatable stuff and topics. We hit Twitter love shoutouts and even hit vape hate mail. Okay, so also remember that. Adam used to vape on air at the time, and I did too. Several people were complaining about the vape sound, which I totally understand because no one wants to be chewing gum or just doing random things, eating, chewing gum, drinking, I guess, is a thing. So certain things like that, and again, vaping the whole, you don't need to be hearing in your ears, whatever you're doing. We hit what the fuck news. Attacked while running, woman drowns rabid raccoon. Worker bit and tussle with would-be thief over stripper pole. And woman in stable condition after fall. I forget where homegirl fell from. I want to say a bridge. And I think she was taking a selfie. Because I hate broads taking selfies on bridges. I mean, that's just funny to me, probably. All right, and then we roll into relationship talk. 5 ways to score a second date. Are you or are you not that guy? Then finally go into comic talk. Comic news, Jurassic World 2 title revealed, Star Wars Han Solo new director, Spider-Man Homecoming news, Venom, Sony's Venom, Carnage villain, X-Men Dark Phoenix, Wonder Woman 2, Batman the Animated Series, Batman Harley Quinn, The Batman Talk. So we were, I guess, jumping into all sorts of Batman-centric news. Then finally rock out some comic reviews. 7 to Eternity, Image Comics, number 5 through number 6. Weapon of Mutant Destruction Alpha, number 1, and Daredevil, number 22, which was Book of the Week. All right, guys, let's see. We're going to start with, bullet points. I don't know why this is cracking me up already. I have none. I have none. So I'm going to run through with just a few things. I've been busy. And in saying that, I just wanted to apologize to anyone and everyone that has hit me up on social media, text messages, Instagram, Twitter, anywhere over the past 2 weeks at least. I've honestly been wanting to get back to you guys, but because of this weird training I'm doing at the office, quote unquote, I'm working from home the past 2 weeks, I haven't been able to listen to any of the podcasts that I normally listen to, let alone any of the music that I crave and desire passionately on a day-to-day basis. Like, it's been kind of intense because I have to be completely aware about everything all the time, and it's an online training course, kind of. So it's like a Skype team deal. And it's, first of all, a trip to be having to do that and to be training and learning in that way is just a different world. It's really complex, and just what I'm doing now, what I'm learning is fucking, you guys would go nuts because I've been stressed, and I don't like to say I ever get stressed and or overwhelmed, and I don't lose sleep over a lot of things, if anything. But, yeah, this one was the one that's got me, guys, and I'm just going to be honest with you. I've just been extremely mentally drained, finishing up at the office lately by 6 p.m., 7 p.m., and then just a lot of overtime, you know, that my eyes are just completely burnt out. The last thing I want to do now is read anything or even watch a movie or TV. Like, I just don't want to do any of that stuff, like to focus that much on shit. Like, right now I don't feel like it's the best thing for me. And the dude that loves to read, like, there was a week of training courses before we did the online with a live trainer, and our trainer John is fucking dope, and everyone in the training class is fucking awesome now that we're all working together. But also it was just it's nuts. Like, the online courses we had to take, even before the training, quote unquote, I love reading, and I hate reading with a passion after day two sucked. Like, it just sucked, guys. So yeah, I'm getting out. The last thing I want to do is read. So what I do here, you know, I'm the cat that loves to read and write for that matter, but just reading so much for that training, I fucking still hate reading. I still kind of do 2 weeks later. And just learning something new is very intense and very detail oriented. So that's just where I'm at. So I'm glad I broke these shows up the way I did, because it'll buy me enough time to toss out some deep dives and rabbit holes for you guys, since, you know, everyone seems to be enjoying that. And also in saying that, you know, that I really hate reading right now. Damn it, E, you really gotta make me work for things like that, huh, homie? All right, let me explain this one. This one is actually really easy to explain, so I've been doing a lot more deep dives and rabbit holes on the side, and everyone appears to be liking them, which is great, and I love it, and buy as the Comic Syndicate myself some time to, all right, let's branch off and do something different. You have the work ready to gun these shows. So just finally put them out. I mean, granted the time, I don't want to do shit anymore. But looking at my work, I'm like, you know what? I can toss these out. Hence the whole writing ones I've been putting out of deep dives and rabbit holes. So I call him E Money. He's dope. He's one of the listeners. That's not a listener. Like, most of you guys aren't just listeners. You guys are friends. And we text each other, and he checks up on me a lot more than I check up on him. But just love chatting with homeboy on the side, and it's not necessarily podcast oriented a lot of time. He's one of those cool cats where he just shoots the shit with me on the side, which I fucking love. So he sent me a picture of some writing, and again, the last episode was the mashup between the Comic Syndicate and deep dives and rabbit holes. This is what I got from the picture he sent me. He hand wrote this and took a picture, screenshot of it, and I loved it. So he took a picture of his writing, handwriting, which is, he told me, I hope you can read this. This is what I got out of it. One, a letter to the Comic Syndicate and deep dives and rabbit holes. And again, his own cursive, his own writing style. Two, the following is just a sample of different writing styles. Three, and Line of your recent crossover podcast. I believe that's what it was. So again, showing me different ways and writing styles he has, which is cursive looks dope. He mixes his handwriting with his regular writing, which I do the same thing a lot, honestly. And then he gets back to another line. One, writing and back, each one of these had their own feel and personality. Two, however, number one felt the most natural. And then three, keep up the good work, homie. And number three, makes my hand cramp. Now, when I first received it, oh my gosh, I really needed it at the time because I think I was really stressed out at the office. Literally stressed out at the fucking office. Like, you guys should see the numbers and everything I have to deal with now, but we'll save that story for another day. So to be mentally just like destroyed and stressed, and like the last thing I wanted to do was like do work to read his handwriting. After the first line, I'm like, this fucking dude, like, he's just fucking solid. He signs it on top of the letter first, Eric Lopez. So much love always, dude. So I appreciate that. And a few of you guys that did explain and, you know, just your writing style, and I totally appreciate it, guys. And even the ones that did send me stuff on the side too. Very dope. So Princess and Lynn, like always, you guys are dope. I forgot fucking who the other person was. There's one more person, two more people. Look, guys, I've been busy. So you know who you are. All right. So I guess that the last best of bullet points, the last bit of bullet points would be that I honestly haven't paid attention, dude. Episode 300 is quickly coming up around the corner, so I definitely want to do some sort of giveaway. But I almost want to be, I don't know, I want it to be like a sort of an hour-long live call-in show, you know? And just have everyone and their mothers call in or Skype in, like literally, you know? I mean, we're supposed to social distance and like, fuck it, let's Skype. And Sadie hit me up on the side and he's like, hey, babe, let's do it. I miss fucking recording. He said he's down. The 2OC boys said they're down. I believe the Luscious Lou said he's down. And this is the first time I'm literally throwing it out to you guys as an audience. I can let you guys know which day I'm going to record. And fuck it, 1 hour of just shooting the shit with you guys. And it's not going to be a regular show. I'm going to hit my bullet points and it's going to be, you know, the start of a normal show. But I'm probably going to kick it more old school and bring some sex facts to the table that one. I'm going to bring back What the Fuck News. I might bring some horror stories back. I should bring back some horror stories too. It's been a while since I've had any of those, but also some horror stories. I can probably bust out both of those as well. But just plans and ideas and thoughts that I have. So if you guys are interested, let me know. And I can figure out the best date for us to all get together. And have you guys on each for 5, 10, 15 minutes, whatever. And just shoot the shit with me. And whatever article I'm reading at the time, I'm going to fucking bust it out. And I want your thoughts, opinions, ideas about whatever it is I bring to the table. I'm creative enough. And I normally like doing something for episodes, you know, the 50 ones, the big episodes. So 50, 100, 150, 200, 250s, and then the 300. I want to do something. And it's 300 episodes, so I figure might as well. I mean, I honestly hit more than 300 episodes already, as far as the numbers go. But, you know, those are the 0.1s, 0.2s, the deep dives and rabbit holes, 0.1s, 0.2s, so stuff like that. But as far as the Comic Syndicate, it will be my 300th episode. So again, if you guys are interested, let me know. And you guys are more than welcome, free reign at any time. And you guys can text me on the side like, all right, is it cool now? And I want to see how many people I can juggle. That way I can have you guys as listeners talk to each other as well, which I think would be an interesting, I don't know, an interesting fucking test or I don't know. Fuck it. That's the idea I have for episode 300. It's coming up in about 2 months anyways. And I guess the last bit of bullet point of my non-bullet point bullet point would be that I have new ideas for shirts, stickers, beanies, and maybe a hoodie for myself. Like, I'm like, I started playing with some things and I'm like, all right, that would be fucking kind of dope. And I don't think anyone would get it. But if you look at it and you know the show, you're going to be like, that makes perfect sense. It's so fucking simple. And you guys would look at them and be like, you know what? That's a kind of a cool design. It's so corny and so simple enough. Yeah. And then definitely make some more deep dives and rabbit hole stickers as well. All right, guys, if you got like the show, The Comic Syndicate, or Deep Dives and Rabbit Holes, please drop a review for The Comic Syndicate on any podcast app you do listen to. Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, CastBox, Stitcher, Spotify. Like and follow The Comic Syndicate on Facebook for behind the scenes of panels, pages, books, of books that I'm currently reading, just more in-depth stuff for you guys, which I have. Again, I've been busy. I haven't been able to do so. Hopefully I can do that tomorrow or possibly tonight. I highly doubt tonight. Yeah, just give me some love. I'm The Comic Syndicate. Look, I don't know where I am on Instagram anymore. I'm at For the Villain on Twitter, at Comic _ Syndicate. There you go. On Instagram. I'll be right back with some comic talk.
Hey, this is Scott Snyder. I'm writing All-Star Batman this year, and you're listening to The Comic Syndicate.
I'm Mitch Garrett, the artist of Sheriff of Babylon.
I'm Tom King, the writer of Sheriff of Babylon, and you're listening to The
Comic Syndicate.
This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to The Comics Syndicate.
Hi, my name is Brian Bucciolato, and I listen to Comics Syndicate.
Hi, this is Chris Michello. We're hanging out here at Frank and Sons, and having a good time on a Sunday or Saturday afternoon. And you're listening to me live on Comic Syndicate.
Hi, this is Brian Michael Bendis, and you are listening to The Comics Syndicate.
Comic Talk.
All right, guys, I'm back with some comic talk. I'm going to try to run through these as quick as I can. I have a really good review, and I got a few things to talk about that last review as I go through it and go over it. But let's hit it. TV and movies first. Lord of the Flies, film in development with Call Me By Your Name director. The classic novel Lord of the Flies. Did I say rings? Fuck me. Is getting a new film adaptation with Call Me By Your Name director Luca Guadagnino at the helm. Okay, Lord of the Flies was a great book I read in junior high school. Great fucking book. And it's, if you guys have read it and you guys pretty sure have seen the movie as well, it was a great movie. I don't know if it should be redone, but in the world we're living in, they're going to remake the fuck out of everything. Speaking of Hellraiser, HBO developing series, Halloween director attached. Halloween filmmaker David Gordon Green is helping develop the popular Hellraiser franchise for television on HBO. HBO is developing a Hellraiser television series with Green attached to direct the series, pilot, and several of its initial episodes. Executive producing the project with Halloween co-writer Danny McBride. The planned series will be written by Mark Verheiden, Swamp Thing, and Michael Daughtry, Trick or Treat, Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Okay. Again, they're going to remake everything. This is going to be a continuation of the film franchise as opposed to a complete reboot of the property. How do you guys feel about that? Another reboot idea. R.L. Stine's Goosebumps lands a new live-action series. How do you guys feel about this one? So this wasn't a show in, geez, fuck me, the mid-90s, 94, 95, and there was a movie about it. So this is going to be R.L. Stine's Goosebumps into a live-action series. Goosebumps has been keeping kids and families on the edge of their seats for nearly 30 years, and we're very excited to partner with Sony Pictures Television and Neil H. Moritz to bring you the enduring brand to life in a fresh new way for today's generation. I'm a horror movie cat, so anything BC, even reading, I loved it, because right now I hate reading. But for kids that are pussies, and we are growing up in a pussy generation, all the kids out in the world are a bunch of pussies anyways. So let's get them into scary and horror through Goosebumps. I mean, the books weren't bad either. The show wasn't bad either. Okay. So keeping on to movies, these next few are going to be interesting to me. Okay, Golden Globes extends eligibility rules. Okay, so the HFPA announced that the eligibility requirements for films seeking Golden Globe nominations will be extended. The HFPA has suspended the rule that a film must be screened to HFPA members at a third-party facility in the greater Los Angeles area. Okay, this is going to make sense in a weird way, and I'll explain it right now. Instead, distributors must send a DVD copy or online link for the film so the members can watch the movie on a pre-approved screen date. The HFPA will also now consider all titles that had a theatrical release date planned for March 15th or after. I'm going to stop it right there real quick. Okay, so what this means is normally every movie that comes out during the year, theatrically, it has to be out for at least 7 days in order to be considered for a Golden Globe Award. The world we're living in, nothing has been released. Everything keeps getting pushed back, and movie theaters are fucking honestly fucking closed. I'm going to go into my job in a little bit, my second job. We're quote-unquote supposed to open in July, I think. I've been so busy with the real job, the office, I think I'm good on going back to the second job. Like, I'm one of those few people, thank goodness, that have been able to work the whole time. But going back to these things again, so now they're going to extend the eligibility because Victoria, before we left the office, asked a great question. So executive producer Victorious. She asks, okay, so which movie is going to win Movie of the Year? Is it going to be, what was it? Is it going to be Sonic the Hedgehog? Or is it going to be, damn it, what was the other one she said? And it was hysterical because we look at each other and it's like, fuck. Technically, yeah, because nothing has been released. I think Bloodshot was one of the last ones. So Vin Diesel, every movie that you guys saw before March, for the most part, those are technically like, we're not having our summer movie draft. So if we're going to play by rules like that, my end of the year list for movies is going to be vastly different than what they have been in the past few years. And honestly, they're going to differ than everyone else's as well. Originally, the HFPA only considered movies that released in theaters or made available on pay-per-view cable or pay-per-view digital delivery and not subscription streaming service. Subscription, cable, channel, or broadcast television, that is in parentheses. In order for a movie to get also a Golden Globe nomination, let's say that movie were The Irishman, I want to say, which is, I've heard 65% of people say that movie is too long and 3 hours sucks or 4 hours sucks. And 35% of people said it's a great movie, so watch it. They literally put that movie out for 7 days in the box office theatrical in order for it to get a Golden Globe nomination. Like, that's legit the fucking rules. So movies can squeak in like that, and Hidden Gems, I believe, was one of those movies as well. And little by little, more movies have gotten in that way. So that's the end of parentheses, in Los Angeles for at least 7 days before December 31st. Okay, that goes into what I was just saying. Both these rule changes were announced in March. However, they were set to expire in April, on April 30th. They will now last for an indefinite period of time. Well, at the state we're going with movies and movie releases, I still don't think, like, I have my list already of movies of the year. You guys should see my fucking list already. Like, I work way ahead in advance, and they look extremely slim. So it's going to be interesting. How do you guys feel about that, though? Do you think a lot of movies are going to get snubbed because nothing came out? I kind of think it would be hysterical, but yeah, it's going to be a mockery of the Golden Globes if literally Sonic the Hedgehog won Movie of the Year, Best Director of the Year. Like, you know, we really got to look at it in that sense, because honestly, that's literally exactly how it would be. This next one's really interesting. AMC Theaters bans Universal Films after Tro's VOD move, so video on demand move. Following comments made regarding Tro's world tour's success, AMC Theaters will not play any Universal films in its theaters. Okay, so I forget, Justin Timberlake and Anna, what's her name? Fucking it. Anna Kendrick are in this movie. Now, this is a sequel. This is one of the first movies that got pulled right away, where it's like, well, every movie theater is closing, let's pull it. Oh my gosh, the Disney one with the magician kids. That one is also one of the movies that was the last to get played in my theater. Bloodshot, Sonic was still in there. A bunch of shitty movies were playing at the time. But Trolls was the one that said, you know what, fuck it. Let's just pull it from theaters and let's release it as a video on demand movie on, you know, let's make people order it. For, I don't know how much it was for, but let's say it's $5. Trip out on this news, though. So because they pulled it and released it this way, they made a grip load of cash to the point where they pissed off AMC theaters. That's in a nutshell, but let me break down this for you guys. Okay, the news comes just hours after Universal announced that the sequel grossed nearly $100 million in VOD rentals. So, bank. So opening weekend, you would think if you're a good movie, if you open to at least $30 million, and if you made it for $5 million, you made fucking profit. So technically, they made money, okay, over its first 3 weeks, generating $77 million in revenue for the studio. The first Trolls film grossed $153.7 million domestically. While the domestic gross may end up nearly the same for both films for a month or so from now, Universal keeps significantly more of the profits. This is keyword. Universal keeps significantly more of the profits from VOD than it does from theatrical releases. Okay, let me tell you something, not even behind the scenes. Movies that get released in the theaters. Theaters do pay profit for, they pay to show these movies at their theaters. You know, get people into the theaters. Theaters don't make money off of the movies in the theaters. Movie theaters make money off of the concessions. Why do you think it costs like $20 for a medium or a large popcorn and about $10 for a large soda? If you guys don't know this, you guys know, theater fucking prices. That's exactly what it is. So AMC as a theater gets pissed off. So let me continue on. This is fucking hilarious to me. And again, probably just hilarious to me. Okay. The first Trolls film gross blah, 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 blah. Okay. And you... Universal makes more money, blah, 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 than it does from theatrical, seemingly making World Tour much more profitable than Trolls. Trolls, the film, exceeded our expectations and proved the viability of premium video on demand. So this is the head of Universal. Shell told the Wall Street Journal, as soon as theaters reopen, we expect to release movies on both formats. Okay, now again, this is the first movie where they were balls enough. It's like, well, fuck it. If people aren't going to be able to go to theaters, let's release it anyways. And you got to think everyone, all the big wigs are looking at you like, dude, I wouldn't pay to watch this fucking movie. Why would, or would we expect people to stay at home and pay to watch it? Guess what? People stayed at home and watched the fuck out of it. Like, that's exactly what happened. So now they're all fucking scratching their heads like, you know what, fuck it. We're still going to release now in theaters theatrically. And we're also going to do these, you know, video on demand shit. So that's what they said. Now, according to The Hollywood Reporter, AMC Theaters chair CEO Aidan Aaron sent a strongly worded letter to Shell on Tuesday evening following the Universal executive's comments. I love this so much, dude. It is disappointing to us, but Jeff's comments as to Universal's unilateral actions and intentions have left us with no choice. Therefore, effective immediately, AMC will no longer play any Universal movies in any of our theaters in the United States, Europe, or the Middle East, Aaron said in the letter. So, again, let me extrapolate all this bullshit for you guys, which obviously by this point, it still fucking cracks me up. Trolls was ballsy enough to fucking... Look, they had no fucking choice. They're going to pull their fucking movie. No one's going to go to watch it anyways. Black Widow, every summer blockbuster movie got held back. Mulan, like, again, everything. We can't go to movie theaters. Okay, big fucking deal. I'm still working a lot. I don't even fucking want to go. Look. They figure, Universal Studios, let's just fucking risk it and we're ready to put the money into it. Let's release it video on demand. Let's see if people would fucking buy or want to purchase it. Like, I wouldn't take my fucking kids to watch this into a movie theater. But you know what? I'm working from home now, so I need my kids to fucking shut the goddamn fuck for fucking 2 fucking hours. I'll pay $20 to watch this piece of shit movie. Or you know what? I'll pay $20 for this piece of shit movie to shut my fucking kids up for 2 hours. Either way you want to look at it, it's fucking hysterical to me. The fact that they made profit off of it and said, you know what? Fuck, this might be the wave of the future for us to, you know, release movies. I got to talk to the 2OC boys about this. But again, how do you guys feel about that? It's hilarious to me that AMC, and I don't work for AMC. It's not my movie theater, my company, my chain. And I have love for movies and, you know, the way movies get released and the whole product. It is dope to me. And I get to see a lot of behind the scenes, or used to be able to see more behind the scenes shit. The fact that AMC got so pissed off that they said, you know what? We're also in the future going to release both. AMC's like, for you making money when we're not going to be making money really pisses me off. So if for you making money and not making me money, we're not going to show any of your – like how big of a fucking dickhead and tool and how fucking pretentious are you? So again – that's what I get out of it. And I thought it was fucking hilarious. So hopefully I put it in a, I don't want to say ethical way. Hopefully I put it in a funny enough way for you guys to break it down and be like, you know what? That's odd. But that's honestly the way it went down. So if you guys, yeah. So anyways, let me know what you guys think about that article if you guys like the way I broke that down for you guys. I can do this all fucking day. All right, I'm not going to. Jeff Johns joins HBO Max Green Lantern show as executive producer. Jeff Johns is a killer fucking writer. So yes, please. I'm either going to have fun naming this title or it's going to piss me off. Whatever I decide. Well, we'll figure it out. All right, let's go to Marvel news. Chris Hemsworth describes Thor 4 script as pretty insane. The Marvel Cinematic Universe actor revealed his excitement for Taika Waititi's Thor Love and Thunder script. It's one of the best scripts I've read in years, Hemsworth stated in an interview. It's Taika at his most extreme and at his best. The Thor actor was unable to reveal anything specific but continued. If the version I read is the one we get running with, it's going to be pretty insane. The script for Thor Love and Thunder was co-written by director Taika Waititi, who famously directed Thor Ragnarok. Okay. I'm down with this. I love Taika Waititi's vision, and I literally saw Jojo Rabbit last weekend. It's a dope fucking movie. And Taika Waititi, if you guys haven't seen the movie, sorry to break it to you guys. This isn't even a spoiler. He's Hitler. Like, but he's the most adorable Hitler. Okay, I'm going to name the fucking show The Most Adorable Hitler Ever. Hashtag episode 293, The Most Adorable Hitler Ever. Oh my god. All right, guys. Look, it's been a long week. And I thought that would be a good fucking time. And I really still think it. Look, hit me up on the side and tell me if I should have run with the most adorable. Hashtag the most adorable Hitler ever. Granted, it's long, so I'd have to cut it anyways. All right. New releases for movies. Yeah, I mean, look, we're waiting on shit. That's what's going to happen. Scrolling through. Okay, you know what? Fuck it. Oh, you know what? This is kind of cool. Okay, so we got some comic news real quick. So Spawn original figure remastered Kickstarter announcers stretch goals. So Todd McFarlane, look, he created Spawn. He draws, and the first art I've seen for him was The Amazing Spider-Man, and he draws fucking dope. So he created a character for Image Comics called Spawn. And if you guys don't know Spawn, I love the fuck out of Spawn. But anyways, he started getting so creative where he created his own line of toys, figures, action figures, collectibles, whatever you want to fucking call them, toys. And he did so great on these figures that sports franchises would reach out to them, but even leagues. So like he's a huge hockey fan. He's a Canadian cat. So Todd McFarlane, I believe it was the first one, NHL hit him up like, dude, we would love if you make figures of our sports cats. And he's like, yeah. So little by little, like MLB started making toys for them and like figures for sports figures. So NFL and creating these figures, but they're fucking sick ass figures. They're so realistic. And granted, they don't have the the articles of the points of articulation, I guess, is the best way to put it. So arms that move, shoulders that move, shit like that. But still, just gorgeous to look at and post up behind a glass or something like that. You know, like a collection. So it is pretty dope. It looks fucking sick, that figure. And it, if it comes out, I want to pick one up. It's, yeah, it's going to be surprising. Last one is going to be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. The Last Ronin brings lost Eastman and Laird story to life. Kevin Eastman and Peter Laird will reunite for a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles story that was originally drafted 30 years ago. This alternate future 5-issue limited series focuses on a currently unknown turtle brother who is seeking justice for his fallen family and friends. Based on the preview pages below, and the preview looks fucking dope, this mystery turtles wields all the original squad's signature weapons. And this is a quote. About 10 years ago, I rediscovered a 20-page outline for a Teenage Mutant Ninja story that Peter and I wrote together back in 1987, Eastman said. The story was set 30 years in the future, which was written then, was set in 2017. The Last Ronin is a heartfelt love poem to all the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle universes of the past and offers up an intense look at one possible future, firmly based on an adapted from an original 33-year-old idea from the original creators. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin, number one, will have 48 pages and will hit shelves this summer. I think the first issue is going to go for like $8.99. But do we even have a summer anymore? So if we don't have a summer, is there going to be a summer release? All right, that's it for comic news, and I'm going to hit some reviews. This is going to be a long one. I knew it was going to be long anyways. I have been reviewing for the past several weeks. Is Legion Quest number 1 through 4. So it runs through Uncanny X-Men, and X-Men at the time came out in 1994 and ended early 1995-ish. And then the aftermath of what happens in these four issues, this four-issue arc. Something really gnarly happens afterwards, and I'll go into that briefly after I go through this. So this one's going to be X-Men Volume 2, Number 41, Legion Quest, Part 4. Fabian Nicieza is the writer. Andy Kubert is the artist. Ron Garney, I didn't realize Homeboy was an artist on here too. Matt Ryan is the colorist. Okay, so as dramatic events unfold above them, the X-Men, specifically Bishop, Psylocke, Iceman, and Storm, have come to a rather startling conclusion. Storm, this cannot be happening, as the monologue goes off. The gods have come to Haifa. Like ants below, people scurry in panic as the heavens explode in a furious rending of electromagnetic field. This is, in part, what the X-Men traveled in time to prevent. And now seeing it happen before their eyes, they have no idea what to do next. So now as we see this, the panel, and sees pages that are having going on, Eric, Magnus, not Magneto yet, now straight up going toe-to-toe with Legion. So it's a dope scene because they're in a city and they're just wrecking everything, but he's not Magneto yet, fighting a full, all-on powerful mutant. Okay, as the X-Men now try to figure out the next course of action, knowing that this part of history never occurred at all. So the next plan is to find Charles Xavier in that time now. And again, they transported back 20 years into the past. As Magneto now, or Eric, is tearing the town apart in defense of the attack from Legion. As we see Gabrielle now aiding Charles Xavier after getting rocked by Legion himself. So last issue ended with Legion about to attack. And this one is like he fucked up his dad. And Eric Lenscher, pre-Magneto, he's like, you fucked up my boy, let's go at it. So he was backing up his boy. It's just very cool. So Gabby says, that mysterious patient, the one who said he was my son, he's fighting Magnus outside. I mean, up in the sky and outside. What's going on here, Charles? Charles, the beginning of the end, I'm afraid. Exactly what I knew would eventually come, Gabby. Although not the way I have hoped. It is the dawn of Homo sapiens, superior. We are watching a genetic atom bomb, and it's exploding over our heads. As Charles quickly does what he has to Gabby, kind of knocking her out like, you know what, you're going to stay safe. He knocks her out using his powers. Psylocke finally is there, able to reach out to Charles as they meet up now and head towards the fight. She's like, all right, fucker, let me fill you in on what's going on. So she, you know, taps into his mind like, oh, fuck. And monologue goes off again. He is stunned into silence. An Asian telepath with a British accent. A giant man absorbing the cascading energy, Bishop. Another who is like liquid ice, freezing that very air around him. Charles Xavier imagined how this day would be countless times. But now, having met others like himself, mutants, powerful, and perhaps dangerous people, a part of him is terrified by the reality of the situation. As Storm now lets him know too what's going on, they finally arrive, him and Psylocke. As the story just jumps to current time now, what's going on present day, not 20 years in the past, with Professor X and Lilandra now talking about the end of reality, where the professor finally realizes that their realities are ending because his X-Men failed in the past to stop Legion, causing this rupture. Not just through the world, not just through the galaxy, guys, through just time itself. Lilandra says, how sad then, and this is, that we die as we were forced to live, together in spirit, yet still light years apart. They are lovers as well. As now all the current X-Men come to realize the severity of the end of the world for each of them now. And it's going to make sense as I go through it. Let me just go through it. Okay. And we have these great and sad moments now in their own ways. So it's really cool to see Gambit now. Kind of sad, isn't it, Rogue? What, Remy? She's just kind of sitting down, looking sad with her arms crossed on her knees. Lilandra's being just a holographic projection. The professor and her can watch what's coming together, but they can't even touch or hold each other. As Gambit lights up his cigarette, just thought that was sad is all. Rogue, Remy, toss that cigarette away, and please come closer to me. Very cool. The relationship between Rogue and Gambit has always been beautiful. We see Warren now, Archangel, Betsy, and he's flying, trying to get to one place to the next. I finally find someone I can get close to, and look at how this relationship gets screwed up. Well, Warren, good news, bad news. You love her, and she loves you, but a couple weeks after you tell each other, all of reality is going to end. Fine, but if I'm going to die, it won't be off brooding by myself. So he's flying across, and he comes across to two of his old school teammates. Scotty, Jean, I'm not interrupting, am I? Jean answers, no. We were just watching the relay feed from the Shi'ar telecom outpost closest to our own solar system. Hank and the Shi'ar scientists predict the energy wave will reach us in a few minutes. As Scott then answers, so the answer to your question, war, is of course you aren't interrupting anything. And as much to their own surprise, they all begin to laugh, which is very cool. So as the television set goes off in the past, reports of a battle raging above the skies in Israel between two superhuman opponents. The opponents, the likes of which have not been seen since the Six-Day War, when several mystery men fought. Okay, that's what the TV says. The panels also now jump to a really dark scene, and it's of a killer villain that I love. So it begins over a decade earlier than my sinister associate predicted. For him, it will be a revelation of both ecstatic and infuriating proportions, although the genetic tree he has so meticulously watched over decades is bearing fruit far sooner than he anticipated. At least the time of booming has finally arrived. As for myself, these events simply mean that the order of ascension begins now, and had made the fittest survive challenge. Yeah, I was probably fucking tired as I was reading that up, guys. All right, so the story now jumps back 20 years ago again. The battle in Israel, with Eric now holding up decent against Legion. That's fucking amped the fuck up. More monologue. Magnus feels Legion's delusional anger as it explodes around him in pounding, searing waves of psionic energy. David Haller, Legion, says, "I won't let you ruin him, Magneto. Even though I've learned you're not a bad man yet, and that you're my father's friend in this time, I still know it's going to happen. I know how it's all going to get twisted. I have to stop you before you become him, even if it means I have to kill you. I can do it too, you know. I'm stronger than I've ever been before, Magneto. And you're still young and inexperienced. You don't know how to really use your powers yet." As Eric, Magnus answers, "What are you talking about? Why do you keep calling me Magneto?" Legion gets pissed. "I figured it all out, Magneto, so I think you can too. I've thought about it every which way I could, and I realized that this was the only thing I can do. Daddy's dreams, his vision, would have come true if you hadn't chose to fight it every single step of the way. If I kill you, then his plans will happen the way they should have. But I couldn't kill you in my time. No, no. See, the damage had already been done by then. So if you die now, before you can ruin Daddy's hard work, he can be happy." As Eric is now on the ropes, says, "These dreams you speak of, what are they?" Legion answers, "Dreams of peace and love, of happiness, of mutants and humans working together for a better world." "That sounds like," as Magneto answers, that's his response, "No, that's impossible. Those are the worlds of," as Legion screams out, "Charles Xavier." Okay, so as Eric finally gets blasted now out of the sky, and he gets rocked, gets blasted, and he's falling now. Charles sees him, "Dear Lord, Magnus, and that boy up there, that poor insane boy, somehow, some way, is my son. He believes he's doing this for me in my name. He's going to kill my best friend for my sake?" Storm answers, "No, Charles, not for you, but for a twisted perversion of what you believe. But Legion will not accomplish his task so long as we are here." Where this is the first time we really see Bobby Drake, Iceman, use his abilities in this way, and it's explained perfectly, finally showing in a beautiful scene, like, he's an Omega level mutant. Storm notices something and puts him to work, like, all these emotional traumatic events we've gone through, like, look at you, you're not paying attention to your powers, and it's beautiful the way it's explained too, so you guys got to check it out. But yeah, so his subconscious barriers are finally getting pulled down, allowing himself to amp the fuck out and, like, pass further than what he's ever used his abilities before. So it's dope. So Bobby Drake, and more monologue, Bobby Drake never dared use his powers this way, stopping an opponent. Not through constrictive ice sheath, but by freezing every single molecule of water within Legion's body, surprising the fuck out of everyone, out of all his teammates. Like, holy shit, Iceman fucked you up. And he's always been a dope character. But anyways, it was kind of cool, actually, as this Bobby. "I saw things differently, looked within myself and at the world in a way which I have never had before. It's hard to explain, but I felt like I was part of something greater, a chain or something, which linked everything together. And I just sort of flicked a finger to twist the chain around." It's pretty dope. So as this goes down, Storm is able to save Eric from his fall, to his death, as they finally got everything in control, or they think. Psylocke, what Cable warned us about was so big, so horrific, that there's no way of knowing if the future's been set straight or not. Get back, everyone. He's not defeated. I can feel his thoughts. Dear Lord. They're about to. And this is more monologue. Unable to prepare themselves, David Haller's enormous telepathic energies tear through the X-Men and young Charles Xavier. That's me, Ryan. Sorry. And when the psionic death settles, only one person is left standing as he just fucked up everyone. And the first thing he says is, explode. That's what you were going to see, isn't it, Psylocke? Well, maybe not yet. But I will in a second, as soon as this monster is dead. Eric, beat the fuck up, jacked up, answers. You dare condemn me for something I haven't done yet. This is your morality. This is your justice. Yes. See, I know what's inside of you. I know what you're going to become. How can you be so certain, boy? Your presence here has changed everything. I may never become this monster you describe. My father spent so much time battling you, trying to stop your madness, that he couldn't help others, couldn't help me. But I can change all that. If I kill you now, Magneto, things will have to be better in the future. After all, they can't get much worse, huh? Charles, no. David, cough. Wait, this is wrong. Legion, goodbye, Eric Magnus Lensher. I hope that in death, you'll find the peace you were missing in life. Sayonara. As Charles, no! As we see Legion make a giant psi knife, sword, or just giant fucking blade. As the monologue goes off and ends. For Charles Francis Xavier, there was never a choice. Today, all his perceptions of reality were ripped away. And he saw a glimpse of what his life might have been. Four noble men and women, mutants like him, who in his name were willing to risk all to save a man who would become their enemy. And one desperate madman willing, almost eager, to kill in that name. His name. His friend. Charles Xavier could not allow that. And in one desperate move, his life, his future, are sacrificed. And for there was never a choice. My thoughts are still to this day, so this is just me. You can't teach heart to fucking people. You know, you can't teach it like that. So something, I mean, how do you guys feel about that? You know, how do you use and piece shit like that together? So very, the way it was written was dope. So Legion, what father, daddy are you? This is impossible. You can't be. Cause if you're, that means, as the monologue continues, dead. That David Haller was never born, which would also mean that the X-Men would never come back in time to stop him, because there were no X-Men, because Charles Xavier never lived to create them, all save one time displaced X-Man, Bishop, his mind damaged by the energies which ripped Legion and the other X-Men away. Bishop remains the sole survivor of a world which is now lost, possibly forevermore. Eric says, Charles, you died to save me? Oh God, Charles. Which means that from this day forward, things will never be the same again. And then we see the aftermath. Everyone now, just little by little, getting crystallized and getting lost in this weird ether and literally slowly dying now. Avalon, an orbital sanctuary for mutants. Magneto left nearly mindless months ago, so this is current time, ago by the man he once called friend, gives silent benediction to his fanatically devoted acolytes. All frozen, caught, unaware as the Omicron effect swept over them. They never knew what hit them. In that, they are blessed. Others will not be so fortunate. For beyond the glassine hull of the lifeless station, the crystallization wave, the destruction of all realities, continues its inexorable onslaught towards the blue-green world, called Earth, to the expecting X-Men. Warren Worthington, Archangel Ward, whatever you want to come, it's coming. Jean, where? I don't see anything. Oh, they all have a less than a second to think about their lives and their deaths, about all the incredible things that have happened between the two. Some have enough time to think about things they've had, while others seize this opportunity. Rogue, Remy, one last moment together to act on the only thing they have left. And that was beautiful to see. As she grabs him and finally kisses him. She's like, oh, I finally have nothing to lose. I'm going to kiss the man that I love. Well, again, poor dude. But yeah, it's anyways, dope. So now getting panels, pages worth of all the mutants around the world. And just the world in itself. Experiencing the same thing. Getting crystallized and losing against reality. As the monologue goes off one last time. And in one instant, all over this now lost, cold, crystal planet, lives end before they had the chance to begin. Friendships torn asunder are never to be mended again. Potential is left unfulfilled. Opportunities that collapse are left uncorrected. As life slips through their fingertips in a whispered flash of energy, dreams die. The world ends with neither bang nor whimper, but in an eerie, silent, shimmering shroud of glass. A world which, like one man's dreams, proved to be such a delicate thing, and when not handled with enough care, is so easily shattered. Okay, I hope you guys liked that. That was part four, and that was part four of Legion Quest. Literally 25 years old now, because it came out in 1995. This is what sets off the events of Age of Apocalypse. Now, it's not the piece of shit movie you guys saw, so let's not slow your roll there. That movie should have been a lot better. That movie was terrible. I'm going to explain to you guys what the Age of Apocalypse really was, and I'm going to introduce you to a lot of cool characters. So pretty much from this history now, Magneto starts the X-Men, and he starts the X-Men for his friend, for his dream. So it's pretty dope. And yeah, it started about summertime in 95, so I figured it's kind of the best way to go about things. And I knew this one was going to be a long show, but a long review and a great review. Like, it made me feel good to reread these again. So if you guys have read it, the picture that I'm going to post up and the pages and panels I got to put up soon anyways, I hope you guys enjoyed it. If you guys enjoyed that review, let me know. Hopefully I emphasized on the key moments, but I normally think I do. So subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you guys can find podcasts. Share the podcast more than anything. I knew I was going to go long, so 57 sounds about right. All right, share the podcast more than anything, and I will catch you guys next week. I don't know, this review kind of sounds a little familiar with the world we're living in, guys. So, all right, people call me an asshole, people call me a dick. And you know what? Maybe that's why I always love the villains more than the heroes. I'll catch you guys next week. Peace out.